The office should have sent the apologies. Chairperson.
Very cold morning in Gauteng. Welcome to all the participants. Welcome to honorable members. Let me check, Chileka, if we have the quorum.
We do have a quorum. I have seven members in attendance, Chair.
Okay. Renali, the apology.
Yes, Chair. An apology from Honorable Kapa Indolomisa, as well as Minister and Deputy Minister, as DG has alluded. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable members, are there other apologies that you'd like to register? Are there other apologies that you'd like to register, honorable members?
Chair, I've just got my hand up.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, I did not see it. Proceed, honorable Brian.
No problem, Chair. Chair, I just want to find out quickly the apologies for the minister and the deputy minister. I assume those were received well in advance, or were those only received today? Because it's obviously a bit disappointing for us to not be able to have them present for the discussion.
Elise, when did we get the apologies of the Minister and Deputy Minister? When did you get them, not we?
I got them yesterday, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Brian?
I saw Minister earlier. She was in the meeting.
Excuse me?
I'm saying, Chair, Minister was joined the meeting earlier.
Apologies, Chair.
Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine, Chair. I was just checking. No problem.
Gift, what are you saying? Where are you from? I've been calling you.
Apologies, Chair. I was just picking up my notebook. No, it was not the minister. It was my laptop. She actually happened to use my laptop last week. So it was named after her. My apologies.
Possibilities are that you go around calling yourself a minister, a gift.
No, she was using my laptop because her laptop battery was off last week. So
we don't know. We must just be careful. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Gift. Okay.
Yes. Honorable Kancho is sending me a message of an apology. She's held up.
Who is speaking?
Nkunu.
Oh, Mom Kunu.
Yes. I'm saying Honorable Kancho is sending me a message and asking for an apology. Kancho.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. No, that's fine. If we are to entertain these apologies, we will not proceed. But ordinarily, I think let's agree that these apologies should be deposited well in time. We must not, we have a group, a type of a portal where we engage with each other. So we expect people to be, to at least deposit their apologies there so that we know who is coming and who is not, so that we don't call people's names once they are not here. From the department, the information I have is that there is a team that is led by the DG. She's here. She failed to speak Setswana. There is also Dr. Fikizolo, the DCG of Oceans and Coast, Ms. Truma Pamodi, the Acting Director of Southern Ocean and Antarctic Support, Ms. Hani in the Office of the Deputy Minister, Ms. Maestri, the Chief Director, Governance and Executive Support, Gift, Shadow Minister, Nicholas from the Office of the Minister is also here, Buyiswa, in the Office of the DG, and Yamkela in the Office of the DG. That is the delegation from the department. Welcome to all of you. Welcome to honorable members. Like I said, it's a bit chilly in Gauteng today. Can I get a move out of the adoption of the agenda? Honorable Winkler, I never got to greet you this morning. How are you? Thank you very much for moving, Honorable Brian. Can we get a seconder?
I second, Chair, Honorable Mbatha.
Raleboha, Honorable Mbatha. Okay, DJ, who leads the delegation in terms of the presentation on the Antarctica as the agenda?
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to yourself and good morning to the honorable members. With me is the DDG Oceans and Coasts, Dr. Fikizolo, who is also the manager and also the DDG responsible for Antarctica. He is going to take the committee through the presentation. And also be in a position to respond to, questions that will be posed to the department chair. With your permission, can I hand over to Dr. Fikizolo? Thank you.
Thank you, DDG. I'm not sure, Honorable Chair, whether to proceed.
Good morning to you too, Ndate. Please proceed.
Okay, good morning, Chair. Honorable Chair, good morning, Honorable Members, and good morning to you, DG, and good morning, colleagues. I will definitely be taking you through the Antarctic operations presentation, but with your permission, Honorable Chair, may I please switch off my video and then so that I can be able to continue without any technical glitches with my presentation?
Sure, that's fine.
Thank you, sir. Can you please move the next slide? Yes. I will start with the geographical location of Antarctica because my understanding is that the presentation, it will be on operations in Antarctic, and then it then warrants that we talk about the uniqueness of Antarctica as the first port of call, and then continue to other slides that will be dealing more with the detail as to how our operations are structured. With regards to the uniqueness of Antarctica, we all know that it is in the South Pole, and it is surrounded by the Southern Ocean, which is the convergence of the three oceans, that is Atlantic, Indian, and the Pacific Ocean. And that ocean that is surrounding Antarctica as the convergence of those is then referred as to be the Southern Ocean. And where Antarctica is regarded as the fifth largest continent, of which 98% of it is covered by ice, that is extending about 1.9 kilometers. And then the average temperature is minus 49 degrees at the South Pole, and with the annual precipitation at 2 millimeters inland and 200 millimeters at the coast. wind speeds can reach 100 kilometers to 200 kilometers, and the average altitude is 2,000 meters. And as we all know, because of the circumpolar front, then the Antarctic and the Southern Ocean play a significant role in the global climate change. Following the International Geographical Physical Geophysical Year, that is IGY, which is 1957 to 1958, then countries that took part in that International Geophysical Year started negotiating the Antarctic Treaty, and South Africa was among the 12 countries that negotiated and signed the treaty on the 1st of December in 1959 in Washington. And the treaty in itself is a multilateral agreement that serves to ensure the continent is exclusively used for peace and science, and therefore promoting cooperation amongst nations, where currently new territorial sovereignty claims are prohibited. You'd remember, honorable members, that there are countries, about 9 of them, that own land in Antarctica, of which New Zealand and Australia and Norway are among those countries that own land in Antarctica. And where our base is at the moment is in the Maud Land area, Dronning Maud Land area, which is a Norwegian area. And over the years, the Antarctic Treaty grew to have several protocols and several committees. And one of those protocols is the Protocol on Environmental Protection, and or to the Antarctic Treaty. And it was signed in 19. It was opened for signature in 1991 in Spain, Madrid. Hence, in many instances, it will be referred to as the Madrid Protocol. And South Africa ratified it in 1995, and it came into force in 1998. That is when sufficient consultative party members have ratified it, or others acceded to it. And at the moment, we are having a 62nd overwintering expedition in SANAI, which is the South African National Expedition 4 base in Antarctica, following at the footsteps of those greats that started the program 62 years ago. As indicated, if we are looking at the environmental signature, if I can call it that, of Antarctica, Antarctica is a continent of extremes. It is the coldest, it is the driest, highest, and most pristine. And together with the Southern Ocean, it has the largest contained ecosystem on the planet. And as indicated in the previous slide, Antarctica also plays an integral role in regulating global environmental processes. And Antarctica's environment is slow in recovering from disruptions. Hence, it becomes critically important utilizing the Madrid Protocol in protecting the environment itself. Given the increase in tourism and the number of bases, then there is that fear of cumulative impact, which therefore increases the risk to the environment. But checks and balances are maintained in utilizing the protocol as mentioned. Next slide, please. The protocol itself has got about 6 annexures. And the last of the 6 annexures is Annexure 6, which was adopted in 2005. And it hasn't yet been finalized in terms of agreements between the consultative parties, but there is some marked progress, judging also from the recent meeting that took place in Helsinki, where the discussions took place about finalizing and encouraging all members to accede to it so that it can be implemented. And it creates a framework for parties to insist that organizations or entities that plan activities in the Antarctic Treaty area develop and implement contingency plans to reduce the risk of environmental emergencies. and to respond to environmental incidents when they occur. So it is an equivalent of the Civil Liability Convention, which is mainly utilized in the maritime transport sector. And parties can take action against non-response of an entity to a particular environmental emergency and create a mechanism to recover the costs of response action, either from the operator or a fund, which will be established. And an international fund to be established for reimbursement for response actions taken by parties that did not cause the emergency. So as indicated, it works and or functions similarly to the Civil Liability Convention, which is about oil pollution, which is an IMO protocol. So SANAI, or South African National Antarctic Expedition, has got five elements, interlinked elements. There is research, the so-called blue sky research, which is mainly coordinated, and the responsibility lies with the Department of Science and Innovation. And then there is long-term monitoring or data series monitoring, which is done by the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment, particularly the branch of Oceans and Coast. And then there is logistic support and research infrastructure, which again is overseen by DFFE, and infrastructure and maintenance, that is the buildings themselves, is the responsibility of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and medical supplies, driver services, and food and medical services generally for the program is the responsibility of DFFE. And there is also search and rescue, which is done by DOT, or is the responsibility of the Department of Transport, working with their agency, the South African Maritime Safety Authority, working together with MRCC, which is based here in Cape Town, and together with the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment, precisely because of the department being the owner of the vessels that traverses that vast ocean space between South Africa and the ice, which is the Antarctica. In addition, DFFE oversees fisheries research and management in the waters around Antarctica through CAMILA. CAMILA is the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources. It is one of those committees commissions that were established under the Antarctic Treaty, and it was in 1982, and South Africa is one of the original signatories. And fisheries that are of interest to South Africa is the Patagonian toothfish, which is the two species of fish. And then there is also ice fish as well as crab and krill. With regards to expeditions, the branch or the department is responsible for three annual voyages, or the so-called relief voyages, which are for conducting research and to carry out maintenance on the basis infrastructure, replenishment of all stocks and supplies, meaning that food and polar diesel and so on, and the changeover of overwintering expedition teams that have an all year round presence at the research stations. And honorable members, you'll remember that And those are at Gough Island, Marion Island, and Antarctica. And for Antarctica, relief voyage is in December, and the vessel will come back in February the following year. And the relief voyage for Marion Island, which is in the Southern Ocean, is between April and May of every year. And then for Gough Island, which is in the South Atlantic Ocean, it is in September of every year. And at any given point in time, for Marion Island, there will be about 20 to 24 expeditioners. In Antarctica, it will be 10. And in Gough Island, it will also be around 10. Next slide, please. That is the South African investment at SANAI 4, which is a base that was completed and commissioned in 1997. where the Department of Public Works played a crucial role in its construction, where a sum of about 600 million at the time was spent to build that base. And on the left hand side, or on the right hand side rather, of the picture, the yellow structure or mustard structure is the new base, which was commissioned in 2011, and which with a price tag of 450 million. And if you look on the left hand side of that right on the left hand side of that mustard part of the picture, there are white structures. It is the old base, which we are working on or towards decommissioning at the moment. Next slide, please. Then there is a building on Gough Island. Gough Island is an island that is owned by the British, but there is an agreement between South Africa and the United Kingdom for its occupation by our scientists, particularly from the South African Weather Services. And on the right-hand side of the picture, there is the SA Agalas II, which is our new research vessel, if I can still call it that, because it was commissioned in 2012 and with a price tag of about 2 billion rand. Next slide, please. Well, when it comes into facilities, as indicated earlier, that the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure is the one that is responsible for all the buildings and facilities that are in the buildings. And we do have the electrical power generation. There is heating and ventilation and air conditioning. There is a hot water supply where two systems are used. There is also a domestic water supply utilizing a smelter, which was installed in 2017. And there is wastewater management to see to it that we conform to the stringent environmental monitoring regime that exists in Antarctica, where we are supposed as a country to report on an annual basis to the CEP as an advisory body to the ATCM. So those are the facilities that are installed and maintained by our sister department, Public Works and Infrastructure. And for electrical generation, as indicated, we have three new 250 kilowatt Scania generators, which were installed in the previous year. Next slide, please. Yes, and as indicated, we do have that new base Sanai 4, but there are shortcomings in the sense that at the moment there is no emergency base close to Sanai 4, where in the event that there is an emergency, that is, colleagues can safely be moved to that. For example, if fire would break out, that there is an emergency base close by, but plans are afoot to have that developed. Secondly, it's the vehicle workshop. We, on an annual basis, have diesel mechanics that are stationed in Antarctica, because we do have a fleet of about seven Challengers, of which four are fully functional and three have got some challenges with their operations, but mainly those are the vehicles that we use for towing cargo from the ice shelf to the base, and then for backloading from the base all our refuse and other things that we haven't used. They must all leave Antarctica and be sent back to South Africa. So we don't have at the moment a workshop, a space where it will be conducive for the mechanics to do work in the vehicles safe from the elements, which have been highlighted when I started my presentation. And there is also at the ice shelf, or close to the ice shelf, a summer station, which is a donation given to South Africa by AVI, that is the Albert Wegener Institute, which is the German institute of the German Polar Institute. Then they gave that to South Africa, and we over the years been maintaining jointly. The last time to lift it, because each and every year the building will sink a little bit in the ice, and then it must be lifted. So German engineers and the South African engineers have been working jointly over the years, particularly from the department, to keep it habitable and to keep it fully functional. But at the moment, we are having discussions with our colleagues in the Department of Public Works to transfer the base to be maintained or fully maintained by them. And we are also looking at the installation of renewable energy systems for heating and electricity generation. And it is encouraging that institutions of higher learning have been involved for the past 5 years or so, particularly the University of Stellenbosch, in making it a point that there is research towards that. And then we are learning from the findings of those researchers to how we can best move forward with renewable energy, as indicated. Next slide, please. This slide is just about indicating the kind of work that is done by the team in the department and the sister departments. As you can see, there are no port facilities where one would say there is a quayside to offload or backload cargo. There is no port superstructure like your cranes or gantry cranes or whatever piece of equipment that ports use to load vessels. We simply use the cranes from the deck of the ship. And as you can see, the vessel pushing against the ice shelf, and at times you find that there are difficulties where ramps have to be made so that there can be easy access to the vessel. And then it's those vehicles that I've mentioned, and then the cargo is offloaded from the vessel, ready to be towed, utilizing the Challenger vehicles as mentioned, where each vehicle, depending on the mass of the cargo, you would have three sledges towed to the base, which is about 180 kilometers away from the ice shelf. And lots of manual labor is indicated in the slide. And where we offload our cargo is called Penguin Butka, but sometimes we also offload close to the German base, Neumayer, at a place called Akta. As indicated, it is a very challenging, I would say, exercise, because at best of times you'll find that the ice develops crevices, and then there should be really serious testing before offloading and towing, so that a calamitous situation is avoided. Next slide, please. There is traveling in Antarctica. The top left picture is a Russian-made aircraft, the Ilyushin 76, which is operated by ALCI, a company that is based in Cape Town, Antarctic Logistic Center International. And mainly it transports cargo between Cape Town and a Russian base with a blue ice landing strip called Novolazarevsky. And up until the recent past, the managers were a Ukrainian gentleman and an Italian lady. And then on the right-hand side, it's a helicopter, which is mainly used to transport passengers from the vessel to the base, the Bell 412s, from which the department enter into contract with a private service provider. And we've recently had a new contract in place with effect from last year. with a company called Ultimate Heli. And then the central picture is a caboose, that is that living quarters, loaded on a sledge, being towed by a Challenger. Those are the living quarters when there is some research that will be done away from the base, or in the event that there is a medical emergency, for example, as in 2017, 2018, when one of the expedition members fell gravely ill. Whilst we do have a doctor that we appoint for Sanai 4, but then the medical intervention that was needed at the time warranted that he be transported to our neighbors, that is about 300 kilometers away from the base, which is Neumaya, and that form of transport was utilized because it was in the middle of winter. Then bottom left is a Besler, a tail dragger that is also used for intracontinental transportation, also operated by ALCI, moving people and cargo from base, in between bases within Antarctica. And we also have, bottom right, snowmobiles. We have about 24 as in our base as South Africa, which are utilized for short distance transport, including fetching visitors when they land at the strip in our base, first clive, that is at Sanai 4, from the aircraft to the base. We use those. Next slide, please. Now, talking about the South African national interests, we do have the custodial responsibilities, and which are entrenched in the or reflected in the Antarctic Treaty, which were signatories of, as explained, and also there is South Africa because of its geographic position. Cape Town is regarded as is one of the five gateway cities. That is the only cities that would have a port facility, which would be the last port of call for every vessel that goes in or aircraft that goes to Antarctica. The others is Ushuaia in Argentina. There is Punta Arenas in Chile. There is Christchurch in New Zealand, and there is Hobart in Tasmania, Australia. So we are also working on that. There are discussions that are also afoot as to kind of have a committee that is constituted of all those five. And as indicated, we've been having constant discussions with our colleagues, particularly those that are in Hobart, and also taking into noting that South Africa is the only African country that participate or that is part of ATCM, which is the Antarctic Treaty Consultative Meeting, as part of ATS, Antarctic Treaty System. Although when it comes to CAMELA, it is South Africa and Namibia. But when it comes into a well-developed Antarctic program, even though it is small compared to other programs, but it is the only one in South Africa, and that is what we also want to guide as much as we can. We understand it to be a unique laboratory, which is why in the new South African Antarctic strategy, you would find that inclusion of other research bodies in South Africa are now being I'd say targeted to contribute and see if they can use that unique laboratory, which is Antarctica, for food security and to look at issues like natural hazards and health and energy and agriculture, as indicated, the participation of institutions of higher learning. Next slide, please. And we also want to optimize use of geographical location to advance world-class scientific research that is responsive to relevant national strategic imperatives and has both a regional and global reach. I've made mention of the gateway, and promote and maintain the special nature and ecological integrity of the Antarctica and Southern Ocean. That is part of our responsibilities as outlined in both the Madrid Protocol and a number of other associated commission texts as links to the Antarctic Treaty System, and to promote public awareness and the interest, because at the moment, not many South Africans know about the program. Not many South Africans know about the importance of the program, and not many South Africans, particularly from the previously disadvantaged communities, do participate or find an opportunity to participate, whether it is through institutions of higher learning or research institutions. And then through what has been outlined or succinctly stipulated in the new South African strategy, then we are looking at changing that moving forward. And we are also looking to plan, provide, and maintain infrastructure for operations in Antarctica and Southern Ocean. And I think I've mentioned the issues of workshops. I've mentioned the issue of a safe refuge in the event that there is an emergency in the base. Next slide, please. This is a very important, because what we've noticed is, particularly in the recent past, there has been a lot of information that has been circulating around, and we feel that it is important as a program to make it clear that whether it is from scholars or whether it is from journalists, there is always a misinterpretation of Article 7 of the Protocol on Environment for the or to the Antarctic Treaty, whereby it is stated that or there is that common narrative that to come 2048, it will be the area will be free for mining, and countries will do as they please. That is not the case. And as we've in the recent meeting last week and that other week further emphasized that it is not true. Instead, what is likely to happen, which in fact what may happen as stated in the original text, is that 2048 it may be up for review. But what should not escape the, I would say, the main focus of people around it, is that that should be read with Article 25 point five, where there should be a regime in place or a legal framework in place that will be allowing that. So, and there should be a number of countries that should be willing to do that, but As I've indicated in the recent meeting, we further confirmed that minerals will remain in the ground, including hydrocarbons, and there is not going to be any mining except research that is going to be allowed. Research is going to be allowed because Article 7. States that it is only research that will be allowed, but for mining for the benefit of other countries, that is not going to happen. So South Africa supports Article 7 and is committed to strengthening it in cooperation with fellow members of the Antarctic Treaty Consultative Meeting, as we have done, and the Helsinki Declaration, which we've just finalized, attests to that. Next slide, please. Thank you, and thank you, DG, and thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much, Ntatefi Gizola. Honorable Members, that is the presentation from the Antarctica. May I invite the honorable members to engage I see the hand of Honorable Winkler. Good morning, Honorable Winkler Ligai.
Good morning and Sawubona, Chair.
I greeted you earlier. I suspect it was when my network was not very good. Welcome. I saw you've been here. You'll be the first, Honorable Weber. You'll be the second, Honorable Paulsen. Goeiemôre, you'll be the third, Honorable Bryant. You'll be the fifth, Honorable Singh. You'll be, no, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Honorable Singh, you'll be the last. Okay, proceed, Honorable Winkler.
Hello, Chair.
Yes, please proceed, Honorable Winkler. I can hear you.
All right, thank you. So my question is basically, we've heard lots of reports from the media, from NGOs, we've had, you know, Greenpeace and a number of other environmental NGOs protesting at the docking of that Russian vessel in Cape Town recently. And apparently these organizations have been providing the department with a lot of information regarding the alleged prospecting. But just like with this presentation, we keep hearing that there's no evidence of this prospecting taking place. So what sort of evidence is the South African government actually looking for? And will you launch your own investigation into this to decide if there are any, there's any veracity to the claims? Or have you already decided as a department in conjunction with the minister that the allegations are false? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Winkler. Thank you. Proceed, Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. I want to say thank you for the presentation. And I want to say I'm sorry to see the ministers are not on here, but yeah, this is an important meeting, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, were the allegations of Russian prospecting in Antarctica discussed at the conference in Helsinki? And if the prospecting in Antarctica is taking place, they should be accountable in the sense of prospecting goes together with quite a lot of laws that we have in South Africa. For one is if you're prospecting, like they say in Article 7, you can't mine, you can't do certain specific things. But that also goes with creating an EIA and an EMPR, the management plan and the environmental assessment. Surely nothing can start happening unless we have these documents. If they are there, did the minister require it? Is there an oversight committee to actually check if these activities are taking place and to what extent? Now, on these islands and in Antarctica, there's a lot of, it's been declared protected areas. There's many birds that only will be found there, nowhere else in the world. There's albatrosses going to these seals and whales. There's also the Randburg wetland that is of international importance. It has been declared a protected special nature reserve. So I would like to know what we are doing from our side to protect this and to ensure if any activities, prospecting, whatever is taking place there, what are we doing from our side to keep everything in place and ensure the environment is not being damaged. Then, Chair, I want to ask, were the minister or any of the officials asked about South Africa's involvement in hosting the Russian prospecting ships from Rosgeo and others? And then on slide 6, the gentleman spoke about Article 7 and South Africa is adamant to agree with this article. My question is Russia adamant to adhere to this article? And will that protect the environment and not mine? And then my last question is, don't you think, colleagues, that the perception is created that South Africa is helping the Russians to adhere to illegal activities in Antarctica? And thank you for that.
Thank you very much, Honorable Weber. Honorable Paulsen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Good morning, colleagues. Chairperson, I'd like to know, there's a treaty signed between South Africa, New Zealand, Chile, Argentina, and Australia. But who ultimately has the authority over Antarctica in terms of who comes, who goes, who does what? Who's responsible for ensuring that, as my colleagues have said, that that the laws are adhered to there, that there's no prospecting if that was a decision that was made. So who's ultimately responsible for that? And also, what sort of funding are we putting into these explorations to Antarctica and our activities there? I do know it's quite a popular tourist destination because even the mayor of Cape Town went to Antarctica, so there must be something wonderful there. Thank you very much, Eva.
Thank you very much, Honorable Paulsen. Honorable Brian.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. It would be great to have the Minister present because I know she's personally been there, so we could have got some first-hand knowledge as well. But we'll ask the questions anyway. Just firstly, the funding in the budget for the maintenance of the facilities on Gough and Marion Island, I heard you mention Public Works. Where does the funding come from that come to maintain those facilities? Can you just provide some more detail there? In terms of the gateway proposal that you mentioned, I assume this is being driven in collaboration with SA Tourism and some of the other tourism agencies. As mentioned by Honorable Paulsen, the City of Cape Town Mayor has gone over there. So can you just expand a little bit more in terms of, you know, how it's envisaged to drive that from an environmental tourism perspective, because I do think that is quite an exciting development. And then just moving on to, you know, the other issues around the alleged prospecting that's taking place in that area. What would the protocol be for a South African scientist or the South African delegation that is working there with scientists if they were made aware of alleged illegal prospecting taking place? Would they have to reveal that? Would they be compelled or obligated to do so? And what would the process be? Has anything like that come through yet? You've also said that certain countries own land in Antarctica. I was a bit confused by that because my understanding is that all the claims in Antarctica are currently suspended. So if you can just expand in terms of what you mean by countries owning land there, are you referring to the islands, the Gough Island and Marion Island, or are you referring to Antarctica itself? Because that, as I understand, is not the case. You were quite careful to say that mining is not allowed, but research is allowed. How do you discern between research and prospecting? In terms of ships and what they're involved, because even though we know that, you know, there's been this clarification that's come through to say that 2048 doesn't mean that the ban's going to be lifted, but inevitably, you know, any ban can be lifted if there are countries who wish to do so, and if there is agreement, and that's certainly not something that we would want to see. And then just a couple of other points, just for clarification. At the Helsinki conference, you mentioned South Africa did support the reaffirmation in terms of that declaration of Article 7. But I believe there was another draft declaration that was put forward, I think by the United States. And South Africa, along with Brazil, Russia, India, and China, didn't support that draft. Can you just explain why South Africa didn't support that draft that was put forward by the United States? And then just two other quick questions. The Madrid protocol annex, liability annex that you referred to in the slide. That hasn't come into force yet. It was adopted in 2005, so it's now around about 20 years later. Can you confirm whether or not South Africa has ratified that protocol, and if we have any other outstanding responsibilities in terms of it, and if the other consultative states are going to be ratifying that index, if you're aware of that? And then lastly, sorry, I know there's quite a lot of questions here, but this is the last one. You also mentioned the installation of renewable energy systems. What is the percentage in terms of clean energy of the facilities there? And does our South African station still burn polar diesel as it did in the past? Thank you very much. I look forward to the answers. Thanks.
Honorable
Singh. Sorry, is it me now? Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, it is you, sir.
Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much for that extensive presentation. And I have no doubt that I don't know who it was that was presenting. I missed his name, but I saw Yamkela Mbogoto's screen sharing. Must have been to the place because there was quite an elaborate description of what's happening there in the area. So I just want to know just a couple of things in addition to what my colleagues have asked. Have we ever done a cost-benefit analysis of this expedition? I mean, of this our presence in that area. Secondly, I know learners sometimes are chosen to go on these expeditions because there was a young boy from my area where I live who was chosen to go. I think he went for a year or so. I just want to know what's the criteria and have they chosen any other learners to join these expeditions? Another question would be, we were told there were 9 members, as part of this agreement and treaty. Are they all contributing and upholding the terms and conditions of the treaty in the way that we are? And the other question would be on what are we finding in terms of the ice cap melting there and the, glacier retreat and pollution in the area? And the last question would be, have we had any fatalities or serious illnesses of South Africans who have been posted in that area? And what have we done about it? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Singh, Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I didn't take the name of the presenter, but thanks for the presentation. And I have just a few questions to ask. The first one is the one of the issue of waste management, because on your slide, you only talk about the biological water plant that was constructed, but what about the other type of waste management and that are there? What's happening with that? And also on the workshop, there's also the old oil there, which becomes part of the waste and which might, if not handled properly, might pollute the sea. And also the old metals in that workshop. What happens to that? Yeah, I didn't get it very well. And also you are saying that the area is very cold, which is true, and there's lots of manual labor. What about the issue of occupational health and safety? Are they being implemented to protect the employees and also the tourists? Because the OHS Act says the employer must protect its employees and also the visitors. This time the visitors are the tourists. And I'm also worried about the issue of food safety. How is this managed there so that you don't have food poisoning coming from that area? I am happy that there is a research and monitoring that is being done. And I'm happy you've mentioned the department that are dealing with it, of which I know we've got experts there, the professors and everyone. But I just want to find out where can we access the research report or research papers so that we can read it and get there to understand what is happening there. Thank you, Chair.
Siyabonga, Honorable Mbatha, Honorable Dlamini.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning. And thank you, Dr. Fikizolo, for the presentation. When you start to say it's minus 49 degrees in that area, I felt it's cold around here in Soweto. So I thought I'll probably I'm not there. But my first question, it is, if it's minus 49 degrees, how is the climate change affecting them on that one? Or is this 49 degrees stable or is changing now and all these other issues? If it is there, therefore, how does this climate change affecting them? The second thing, I think Honorable Singh has tried to, has asked that kind of a question. It's about the investment. If you want to quantify it with our maintenance budget, how are we doing there around on annual level? My third question is that now, is the benefiting of these companies that you spoke about who deal with transport and the other things? If you are able to give us maybe an analysis about these companies based on a race, in particular to know, to say, which company owns by what and for which race it is there, so that now one can be able now to understand if it is impacting on the poor of the poor, so that now they can be able to benefit on that one. My last question, these NGOs who are complaining about prospecting and all these other things, yes, they're giving evidence report and all that. They're only mentioning what actually Russian is doing, but we'll mention to say there are other countries that are there, others who own land, then ourselves federalizing from the, what you call it now, from the British and all that. Then now, do you have an analysis about these NGOs? Who are these NGOs? Because if you check in South Africa, we have more than about 35,000 NGOs that are there. Others are owned by two or three people. Then we don't understand now how actually they do their own things and all that. But who are these NGOs? Thank you very much.
Honorable Brian, is that the legacy end?
Sorry, Chairperson, if you allow me, I just want to correct something I said. I just realized, as I said it afterwards, I put my camera off. When I was referring to that draft declaration that was made by the United States at the Helsinki conference, and I mentioned that Brazil, Russia, India, and China didn't support it. It was Brazil, Russia, and China. India, in fact, did support it. So just to confirm that. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Bigizo.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will attempt to answer all the questions that were asked by the Honorable Members. And I would like to kindly request from the Honorable Members if there is any question that I've left out because of the number of questions that have been asked, that it be raised again so that I attempt to respond to it. Starting with Honorable Winkler's questions about NGOs protesting about the Russian vessels and whether there is prospecting taking place and whether the allegations are false. there are maybe a couple of things that I would like to mention for starters. That as South Africa, maybe it will be better to start off by saying Antarctic Treaty operates outside of the United Nations framework. It is a different arrangement. So what ordinarily would apply or would be viewed as standard in as far as the United Nations is concerned because of so many protocols that the United Nations has been able to put in place over the years through the General Assembly recommendations, if I can call it that, and the conventions of special agencies. There is that kind of framework in there. When it comes into the Antarctic Treaty, it's consultative bodies that will have a discussion on a particular matter. And when it comes into environmental issues, the CEP, which is the product of the Madrid Protocol, is the advisory body on environmental matters that the Antarctic Treaty consultative bodies should know of, and then decisions be taken. Secondly, there will be SCAR, which is about Antarctic research. It's a scientific committee on Antarctic research, which also conducts extensive research or coordinates extensive research that is done around Antarctic. And their findings also find their way into the Antarctic treaty meetings for advice. Thirdly, it's the Council of Managers for National Antarctic Programs, COMNAP, which is about logistics that are taking place in there, be it vessels, be it aircrafts, be it vehicles inside the borders, if I can say that, of Antarctic. They are concerned, more focused on those, and then give advice as well. It's an independent body, but they give advice to the Antarctic Treaty consultative meeting, that is to the consultative parties. And then the last one, particularly if we're talking about tourism, IATO mainly facilitates tourism in Antarctic, utilizing ships, particularly from the North America to Antarctic. Now, putting that one aside and then coming into the United Nations, as mentioned, and the role that South Africa plays. You honorable members would also remember that when it comes into the delineation of the marine environment, the marine environment, according to the Law of the Sea Convention, if you like to call it that, LOCSC or UNCLOS, there is that 200 nautical mile mark. But before you can talk about from the baseline, that is from the coast, there is the 1 to 12 nautical mile mark, which is the territorial seas. Then there's the contiguous zone, 12 to 24. And then there are different set of laws that are applied there. From 1 to 12, everything. But where I am driving at is, when it comes into a vessel that will be calling into a port, any port in South Africa, particularly the 8 commercial ports, from Richards Bay to Saldanha, any of the commercial ports, then they need to report that to the Department of Transport and 72 hours before getting into the exclusive economic zone. Then we're talking about the EEZ, which is a 200 nautical mile mark. And then there is the so-called innocent passage, and then there will be a calling into the port. The Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment doesn't play any role in there. The reason why the Department of Forestry, Fisheries is not playing any role when it comes into a vessel that will be calling into any commercial port in South Africa is because that responsibility lies with two departments. It lies with the Department of Transport from the safety of navigation point of view, and then from the economic point of view, it is the Department of Public Enterprise. Public Enterprise, then you will have your Transnet National Ports Authority, and then the Transnet National Ports Authority, when it comes into berthing facility, pilotage, anchorage, all those, they fall under the under Transnet National Ports Authority. If the vessel is going to be serviced, then another player comes in, the Transnet Port Terminals, TPT. So that is a business transaction. And a player from the public of South Africa would be companies. Take, for instance, if we are talking about the Russian vessels, Transocean, which is a South African, South Africans who are responsible for that, they will be the agents of the ship, being a go-between between the port authorities and the Department of Transport to fulfill those requirements, those legislative requirements. So the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment doesn't play a role in there. So it is them. Now, when it comes into what would be done by any other country, which is a consultative party, obviously that will be tabled in the in one of the two working groups of the Antarctic Treaty Consultative Meeting, and there will be a discussion on the matter. As it stands, there is no research plan, nor there is any prospecting plan that has been tabled in front of the Antarctic Treaty Consultative Meeting, whether it was the one in Berlin last year or the one that has been in Helsinki in the recent past, where Russians are saying they will be going to Antarctic and do a prospecting of hydrocarbons. It is a matter that, as South Africa is part of ATCM, is not aware of, precisely because it has not been presented at the platform where it is supposed to be presented and be discussed. And given that, that gives us a comfort in saying that, yes, we don't know about it. Yes, we don't think that there is any of prospecting that will be taking place in there. When it comes into research, no research has been specifically targeting hydrocarbons that has been tabled by any of the consultative parties. So as to the origins of that, well, we are not sure. I am not sure as a person who represents the department or who represents the country in that platform. I am not sure where the origins of that narrative come from, and as far as I'm concerned, with the facts that were presented to us in terms of the agenda and the discussions that took place, that didn't happen. So in summing up, I would say innocent passage is allowed for vessels, number one, from the United Nations point of view, and South Africa is a signatory, we are bound to allow that. Two, economic activities are, when it comes into maritime transport, is the responsibility of two departments, not the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment. And coming to Honorable Weber's as questions, whether the matter was discussed whether the matter of prospecting was discussed in the meeting, as I've indicated, it was not discussed. It was not tabled by Russia. There were other matters which were about what is happening in Europe at the moment as we know it, which they were really focused on. And when it comes into prospecting and other matters that they are interested in, they were not discussed. It was about politicization of the organization that they were really concerned about. And of course, when it comes into EIAs, there is a provision as one of the just a second. There are provisions as part of the annexures, as indicated, which deals with EIAs. All I'm saying when it comes to that is that there is a framework which has been adopted. I think it's Annexure 2, subject to correction, which deals with EIAs, and all the consultative parties are bound by that. And it is not the Minister of the Department of Forest, Fisheries and the Environment who is responsible for that. That is driven at ATCM level, not at country level. But then there is the issue of sub-Antarctic islands. Yes, France, for example, our neighbors in sub-Antarctica, they do have their islands, Kerguelen and Crozet. Australia has their islands there, McDonald and Head. South Africa has its island, the Prince Edward and Marion Island. All those, even in Kamila, you will find that there will always be a footnote which stipulates that national laws will apply to these areas because they are areas which belong to these particular countries. And if we're talking about Prince Edward and Marion Island, we all know the history of the annexation in 1948, 1949, and they remain a South African territory, and all the laws that are applicable in the Republic are also applicable there. But beyond that, our laws do not apply to our neighbors, France, as I've mentioned, nor do they apply to our neighbors, Australia, or westwards, if we are talking about Bouvet Island for the Norwegians. So what are we doing on our side? On our side in South Africa, we are continuing to encourage consultative party members where there is a matter of concern raised at that particular meeting, that we should always strive for those founding principles, which is science and cooperation and to use the area for peaceful means. That is what we always strive for. That is what we always encourage our fellow consultative parties to do. And when it comes into Article 7, there was no opposition of the reaffirmation of what Article 7 stands for from the Russian Federation delegation. And fortunately, they were sitting right next to me, so I would have been able to pick up any disagreement from the delegation, but they were in support of it. And decisions at ATCM are taken by a unanimous agreement by all the parties concerned. If it is one country that is saying no, that does not see the light of day. So all I'm saying, now that we have the Helsinki Declaration, definitely is a reflection of what all the parties, with the Russian Federation included, are saying about it. Yes, there are areas or parts of it which in the report they said they are not agreeable to those, but they have got nothing to do with Article 7. It was about the processes in terms of accepting a new member, which was a different discussion. But when it comes into what we're talking about, Article 7, its implication, its application or implementation, and the monitoring thereof, they were fully agreeable. And South Africa is helping Russia, to do what they are doing, what are they alleged to be doing in Antarctica. As indicated, Honorable Weber, South Africa is part of the United Nations. So in as far as the flow of traffic to and from South Africa, we are bounded by those laws. And fortunately, if I'm talking about UNCLOS, but there is also Maritime Zones Act, which is the domestication of what I explained about UNCLOS. So I would say all the countries that live through South Africa, Norway included, United Kingdom included, Germany included, all those, Russia included, as consultative party members and as countries that are doing work in Antarctica research, that is, then our aircrafts or their aircrafts or their vessels, then they will go through South Africa as the last port of call, which to me is helping South Africans in as far as business is concerned, because they kind of stock everything from Cape Town when they are proceeding to Antarctica. And with Honorable Paulson, as questions, it was about the authority on who goes and into Antarctica and who ensures that laws are really upheld in there by those who participate or who conduct research in there. At the moment, when it comes into the general acceptable research practices, and laws that govern those, it is the Antarctic Treaty Consultative Meeting and the ATCM as part of the Antarctic Treaty. And the ATCM then, through its secretariat, any matter that is happening in there is reported to the secretariat, and then the secretariat will compile reports that will be circulated to members internationally, and then which, if there are area or issues that are matters of concern, they will be raised when we get into the ATCM, the annual ATCM meeting. So if there are transgressions, those transgressions will be noted and be discussed, and then countries that would have been or party members that would have been found to have transgressed, then as to what will happen to them, then discussions will take place in the ATCM meeting. So what I'm saying about this is the ATCM has an internal structure that deals with that, but it's not centrally controlled in the sense that if you look at CAMILA, when it comes into transgressions, which are about fishing activities, for example, or pollution from ships, whether it's a dumping offal or whether it is a pollution from ships like in oil and other things, there are conservation measures which are discussed and reviewed on an annual basis if there is a need, and with proper sanctions attached to those, such that the transgressors will be measured with what I would say will be congruent to the transgression that they have conducted. So you will find that all those bodies, they are under the Antarctic Treaty, and they are looking at various aspects of work that is happening, various human environment interactions in the Southern Ocean and Antarctica, and then there are those control measures in place. And with what sort of funding are we putting as a country in Antarctic research? Well, it's in different places, I would say, Honorable Paulson. If we're talking about blue sky research, which is projects that would be for honors, masters, and PhD students, that is through the Department of Science and Innovation, through the National Research Foundation and universities, where there will be principal investigators. But for long-term data series monitoring, the Department of Forestry, Fisheries, and the Environment does budget for those, including the logistics part of it, which is for the vessel, for the helicopters, and for the vehicles that we use when we get into Antarctic. And for Gough Island and Marion Island, we use helicopters, and then provisions are always made for that. But I want to be also quick to add that what is globally acceptable is that when it comes into Antarctic and sub-Antarctic waters, for that matter, is the currency that is used there is science, it's research. And as South Africa, we've continued to produce scientific papers that are utilized internationally from our universities. As I've mentioned, there is the University of Pretoria for top predators. There is University of Rhodes, and Rhodes is glaciology studies, and then you go to Forte, it's geology and UCT oceanography and so on, and with Stellenbosch, it's engineering, looking at the bending moments and the stress factors of vessels, propulsion system, working with other universities. So there is a lot of papers that have been produced, that we are continuing to produce, which is the currency that gives South Africa, I'd say, a platform to stand on in as far as international work and the amount of science that is produced in Antarctica. And not to say that we are saying it is sufficient, we would still want to produce more. And for questions raised by Honorable Bryant, funding for maintenance, what would normally happen is that funding is from Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and how they come up with the amount or the budget to do repairs in there. When we employ as the Department of Forest Officials and the Environment, one of the critical positions there is the base leader or the team leader, or who would be either an engineer or a high level diesel mech. And what would happen then is there will be monthly meetings where issues that are of concern in as far as the functioning of the base, from the generators to the water systems and so on. There are those monthly meetings between ourselves and that is in here in Cape Town, and our team leader, who will then write a report and forward it to us. And those reports, they find their way to our colleagues in the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, wherein then they will develop their maintenance plan. And that maintenance plan will also encompass the budget for conducting that maintenance plan, such that in the following year, as I've mentioned, for Marion Island, we go there in April and May. So for 2024, April and May, there will be that maintenance plan that they'll be having, which will inform the budget that they need. And when we go down there, we go with all the spares and parts that they need, with the team and the necessary expertise that they need for maintenance. And the gateway, it is a concept that, for example, has been in existence from 2009, and there were agreements that were signed between cities and so on. But if you look at the models are different. I will make mention of Hobart and then come to Cape Town. With Hobart, the municipality has something to do with the port that is in Hobart. But if you come to South Africa, the ports are not owned by the cities. Ports, it's a national key point, and ports are managed or run by Transnet National Ports Authority, as I've mentioned, as the landlord. You would remember that the World Bank model that led into the landlord and the operator model. We started with Portnet and so on, but now we have TNPA and TPT, as I've mentioned. So what that does is all the port users, through the National Ports Act, they will be part of the Port Consultative Committee. And then where we are talking about people providing food, that is victualling for the vessels, people that are providing bunkers for the vessel, all those under the Port Consultative Committees, and which is different from other countries. And that is where then there is a problem, because those, they have their discussions under that umbrella. And if there is any matter that must be escalated to the minister that receives those through the National Port Consultative Committee, the Minister of Transport, who chairs the NPCC. So if we're talking about the gateway is in the actual fact, the port, because all the functions of supporting National Antarctic Program, say the Norwegian Polar Institute, when their vessel is going through Cape Town, it is not necessarily going through the city of Cape Town, but the port of Cape Town. So that's where discussions are as to how it can be best managed. But that discussion is still at an lower level than it would be expected. But the ports are continuing to do what is expected of them. Over and above that, the private sector, which is working with the ports in as far as ensuring that the port discharges its responsibilities in as far as these national projects, national programs is doing their work. The missing part of it at the moment may be the tariffs, because the tariffs are determined by the ports regulator. The ports regulator also reports or is an agent of the Department of Transport. So then there are negotiations at that level whereby in terms of tariffs that are charged, the research vessel is not the same as the vessels that are merchant ships according to the classification of the Merchant Ship Act. So the gateway, it's different models, different approaches. You go to Christchurch, it's a different model altogether. It's different from Hobart. It's different from what is happening in Punda Arenas as well. So those are the discussions that we are having as to how do we find overlaps? How do we then assist each other as the countries where we have this last port of call to Antarctica? You will excuse me here, Honorable Brian, but where there's something about suspended, but my hieroglyphics here is now getting the best of.
Sorry, it was about suspected prospecting and what our scientists would be compelled to do.
All right, thanks. Or suspected. Yes. Thanks. Thanks, Honorable Brian. Sorry for that. It is the responsibility of all members to report any transgression that they see or that they witness. And any scientist who may be out in the field, and instead of ice cores being drilled for measuring whatever the scientists will be measuring from ice cores, find that they were drilling for something else, that should be reported through an electronic reporting system that has been put together by the Secretariat of ATCM. Other than that, there are inspections which different countries, or say three or four countries, would put together and go to various bases and sites around those bases, and then compile a report that would be presented at ATCM. South Africa has been inspected and were found to be having a certain issues that we need to address, for example, the emergency base, and which is why we are addressing it. So it happens to every country that is participating in Antarctic. And now I get what I wrote here. It was about countries that are owning land. Australia owns the biggest chunk. About more than 60% of Antarctica is owned by Australia. No, what has been suspended, Honorable Bryant, is countries now claiming new claims that has been suspended. Those who have claimed remain the owners of those land. And as such, they would always hold side meetings at ATCM meetings where claimants would have their own closed door meetings. And even in Helsinki, that's what they did, because there may be issues that as claimants they would want to discuss. New Zealand is one of those. And it's interesting that the land that is adjacent to New Zealand is what they claimed. The land that is adjacent to Australia is what they claimed. But the land adjacent to South Africa is the one that was claimed by the Norwegians, but that is something else. But I just wanted to confirm that they are still holding on to the land that they've claimed. That has not been suspended. What has been suspended is application for new areas or for new claims. And when it comes into the ban, discussions or decisions rather in ATCM or in all the organizations or committees or commissions under the Antarctic Treaty, decisions are by consensus. And we know for a fact that there are countries who are very strong on that, that must never be lifted. And South Africa is one of those. We're saying that hydrocarbons in particular, minerals in general, should remain in the ground in Antarctica. And if there is anyone who would want to lift that one come 2048, which does not look likely, but it will need that all the members, we are talking about plus 50 at the moment, they should be in agreement that there should be that ban. But it cannot be one country would say it must be lifted, and it be lifted. And when it comes into the Helsinki meeting and the support, as you've mentioned, of Russia and China and Brazil and India, you've indicated that India was in support. With the greatest of respect, Honorable Brian, I would beg to differ because I was in that meeting. And the reason why the countries were not in support of what the United States of America was presenting, it is because it was outside of the Paris Agreement. They didn't want to put in the text that is in the Paris Agreement, because all of our countries have discussed and agreed on what is reflected in the text of the Paris Agreement. And now in Helsinki, we were not climate change specialists. And as we were not climate change specialists, but we knew what our countries stand for. We knew what our respective countries' positions were in as far as climate change is concerned. So if there is a matter that would have climate change in it, and there is a decision or a document or a declaration in this instance, binding or not binding, text that we've agreed on should be reflected as such. So that was the bone of contention. And unfortunately, India had to support that because they are party to the Paris Agreement. Unfortunately, China had to oppose what the United States was proposing. That and South Africa, of course. And it may sound as if it is BRICS that was opposing, but in the actual fact, one would say it was the developing countries fearing that for agreeing on something that is outside of the Paris Agreement, we leave them with the burden of implementation, and then they will be judged of their failures, which wouldn't not necessarily be starting where the implementation is concerned, but starting with the agreement itself, as I've indicated, binding or not binding. And with how we are running our bases, we are still running on polar diesel. We don't have at the moment any technology that we are using that would be reducing our carbon footprint as it is in Antarctic. But we are looking in the matter, which is the reason why another brand I was saying that I'm happy to say that institutions of higher learning are really beginning to look into testing some of the technologies that may be utilized in the future. But at the moment, we are continuing to ban hydrocarbons, unfortunately, in the form of polar diesel. And Honorable Singh asked you about the cost-benefit analysis of our presence. At the moment, there is no...
As you summarize, Morena Sigizolo.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Chair. We don't have a program that is about selecting students to go and be in Antarctic as a department. Students that we normally work with are those that would be nominated by principal investigators from the universities through the funding of their projects by NRF. And then we'll find a way of working with them as the department for proper data or for or plankton or whatever we'll be interested in, or even krill for that matter. So, but at the moment, we don't have any program that is to that effect, except private companies that we've seen to be starting to do that, but we haven't had an opportunity to engage with them to look into the project as such. And waste management or glacial retreat and pollution. Glacial retreat has been reported by SCAR in the SCAR a lecture, which they normally do in one of the days during the ATCM meeting. They did paint a picture of what is happening in terms of global warming and its impacts in as far as melting of ice, where there are areas where they say that ice has gone down tremendously over the past 5 years. But that paper is available in SCAR's website or the presentation that they've made. And with waste management, solid waste, we installed in our base for I would say what would be the sewage system, where we compress and compact it and bring it back to South Africa. That goes with other solid waste that we produce in here. When we go down to Antarctic, two of the staff members that we take along from the branch are waste technicians, which their work is to sort out all the waste material that have been generated, whether it's metal, sorted aside glass and paper, and then pack it accordingly and bring it back to South Africa, because one of the regulations is that we don't leave anything in there. Food security, we have began a process of employing chefs, properly trained chefs, to look after food stocks, to look after the quality of food and the diet of expedition members. And at least that is bearing some fruits for us at the moment. And with occupational health and safety, that is central into our work. Hence, I would, I'm not going to be reprimanded by my supervisor, invite all our members of the portfolio committee that when they have time to go and visit the South African base, particularly when the vessel is down there and offloading, to kind of observe and see what we do out there. I'll stop there for now with my responses. Honorable, thanks to you and thanks to the members.
Honorable Winkler.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a few follow-ups. So I had requested for the presenter to give us feedback on whether they had received any evidence from NGOs about alleged Russian prospecting in Antarctica. And I don't believe that question was answered, I think, succinctly. In terms of the Antarctic Treaty consultative meeting, the presenter also said that no research or prospecting plans had been tabled by Russia at those meetings. And he said that he doesn't think that there is prospecting taking place. But I do believe, due to the concern and gravity around this these allegations, that saying that you don't think something happening is not substantial enough to warrant to say that, you know, we shouldn't pursue any further investigation. So have you received any evidence from NGOs? And as a signatory to the treaty and a member of that that consultative meeting body, is there an onus of responsibility on you to then present any evidence that you may receive to the other signatory countries at these meetings, and then to look at whether a transgression has occurred, and then to allow for that body then to decide on the way forward? And then my other question is, if it is found that Russia has transgressed in terms of prospecting in Antarctica, will South Africa actively then not permit allow any more docking of Russian research vessels if these transgressions were in fact made? And will you be consulting then with the other departments like the public enterprises and the Ports Authority, as well as the Department of Transport, should, as I say, the transgressions come to light? Thank you.
Honorable Brian.
Thanks very much, Chair. Also, just a couple of follow-up points. The first one was a question that I asked in terms of discerning between research, scientific research, and prospecting. How would South Africa weigh that up in terms of how we discern between those two? Seismic blasting, for instance, is generally considered to be a form of prospecting for resources. So just checking in terms of how you discern in terms of that. Also, my question in terms of the Madrid Protocol, just want to find out whether or not that has been ratified by South Africa, and if we have any responsibilities in terms of that, just that one. And then just can you expand, I'm a little bit confused in terms of the question that I raised in terms of the US's proposed draft declaration. You said that Brazil, Russia, and China and South Africa didn't want to sign because it went against the Paris Agreement. But it seemed that many of the other countries, particularly some of the European countries, were happy to sign it. I mean, are you suggesting that sort of France and Belgium are prepared to go against the Paris Agreement? I'm a little bit, can you just expand a bit there? So the reasons that South Africa didn't sign it was because of the Paris Agreement. I'm just a bit confused. Thanks.
Honorable Singh.
Yeah, Chair, very, very, very quickly, I don't know if I missed about fatalities or serious illness or anything of South Africa being on the island. Thank you.
Honorable Singh, would you please be kind to repeat? Your bandwidth was not very good there.
Yeah. Okay, sorry about that. got a bad bandwidth. I asked about any injuries or fatalities of South Africans, maybe while they were out there. Has there been any such report in what has been done? Thank you.
Okay. Did you capture that, Dr. Vigizolo?
Unfortunately, I didn't, but I'll be happy if Honorable Singh can repeat, but because he, on my side, he is breaking badly.
Were there any fatalities out there?
Okay, Chair, let me try one more time.
Okay.
Without my camera. Yeah.
Sorry, Honorable Singh.
Yeah, any fatalities or illnesses or serious injury of South Africans while they were working abroad on the island? Thank you.
I hope you are clear now.
Yes, I got the question. Yes.
Okay, the last one will be Honorable Mbata, and then I'll give you an opportunity, and then we close. Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Vigizolo. I think on the issue of food safety, you didn't answer me very well. I know there's a chance, but there's a certificate of acceptability, which the kitchen or whoever that is preparing food for the people there must have as part of compliance to the food safety, and also there must be the issue of the swabs, the food handler swabs and utensils swabs. That is food safety. There's somebody who's might not closed, and that is what it should be done as part of food security and food safety. And then on the issue of the OHS issues, I didn't hear anything about the OHS, that are part of OHS Act implementation. That area is very old, and we should know about their so that they don't have the cold stress incident in that area. So I didn't hear about that. And then where do I get also your research papers or reports so that a person can read further? And lastly, I just want to know, when you say that a waste is being shipped, all type of waste is being, I believe you're saying it's separated there and it's shipped back to South Africa, where does it end? Does it end at the landfill site or it goes to the buyback center or where? Thank you. Oh, the last one is the issue of the vessels. Sometimes you find the vessels sitting there for years without being removed. What happens to those vessels that are stuck in there for years and the owners are not collecting them? Thank you.
Okay, that was the last end, Dr. Vigizolo, in less than 8 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Chair. I will try and be very quick. With regards to Honorable Winkler's questions, there hasn't been any evidence from the NGOs. It has been allegations with no evidence. And which the department has also been calling for, that with the allegation there should be evidence, and unfortunately it hasn't been forthcoming. And the ATCM definitely is a body that would be concerned with transgressions, and definitely it is a body that will act on any transgression. And in this issue, there hasn't been any evidence forwarded to the country, which is South Africa, or forwarded to the Secretariat for it to be tabled at the ATCM. So there hasn't been any decision on the matter, because there hasn't been any discussion on the matter, because there hasn't been any evidence thereof. With permitting vessels to transgress, to come to South Africa or to transit through South Africa, that is a question that I was of the view that I've responded to Honorable Winger. My apologies if I didn't, because if I can revisit what I said, there are different parts to this. When it comes into the ports, it will be the issue of the Department of Transport. But if there is a sanction that has been issued, if there could be a sanction against any of the Antarctic Treaty Consultative meeting parties or consultative parties, then it is incumbent definitely upon us to see to it that all parties involved are informed as such, and then that the sanction that needs to be applied, that it is applied accordingly. But unfortunately, at the moment, we haven't reached that stage. And with Honorable Bryant, with prospecting and research, unfortunately, similar platforms are used. Similar vessels are used. Multi-beam equipment is used for looking into whatever the scientists will be looking at, which the information can be shared. So it is really difficult to say you can at face value say that this is for prospecting and this is for science, and you rely only on the application made by the country that this is for science and this is for prospecting. And since science is something that can be done in Antarctic, So science is what is then done by countries. And we've ratified the Madrid Protocol in 1995. So our responsibilities is safeguarding the pristine environment and to carry out all our responsibilities as outlined in the Antarctic Treaty and to report as also mandated to do so. So that's what it entails. And then coming to what I said about the United States, what I said I was not about going against Paris Agreement. What I was saying was some text that is making specific reference to developing countries, in their presentation, they eliminated that, or the presentation they provided to the meeting, or the proposal that they were tabling in front of the meeting was not making mention of the responsibilities what the developing countries I'll say the special dispensation of developing nations. So it was then difficult to agree on that, because the proposal was incomplete. More especially if you are talking about the targets in as far as the pre-industrial and post-industrial figures that are in the Paris Agreement. In their proposal, it was not there, and it was not necessarily to say that the countries were opposing to what they were tabling, but they were raising concerns that it is incomplete. So it should be complete so that the burden of implementation is not really hard felt by the developing nations, because that is what is likely to happen. So because post agreeing, there is implementation, and then the means of doing that, that matter should be addressed, and it should be part of the text that is being proposed. That is what was a cause for concern. That was what was rectified in the end, which is why now we all adopted the Helsinki Declaration, because it was making amends to those. And Honorable Singh asked about illnesses and fatalities. There have been illnesses, but not necessarily caused by the environment that people are working in, but I'll make mention of appendix, for example, where a person has got appendicitis that cannot necessarily be attributed to the environment, but it is an illness that a person will suffer from, and there has been fatalities. The first fatality in the South African Antarctic program was in 1970. And those, it's accidents in the main. I don't have full statistics with me, but it's an expeditioner will fall into the crevice, and because those crevices are deep, fall, and they will die because of injuries sustained from falling from those heights. And no fatalities from equipment that would injure people whilst working has been witnessed thus far. With Honorable Mbata's question with food safety, I will provide a written response to that, because I cannot really say that there are those certificates in place, certificates of compliance. I will provide a written response to that. And with occupational health and safety, there were studies that were done in line with the implementation of occupational health in there. There was a document that was produced which gave an indication to the department as to what we need to be focusing on. The department now has established an OHS directorate which is servicing the program as well, in as far as provisions of the occupational health and safety are concerned. Papers, the depository will be in the universities, but we do have as a department some that we produced ourselves, but I will also come back with a written response to that as to where you can get all the papers that have been published and maybe the different areas of interest that you may have in the papers. With vessels, that is a National Ports Act a matter. Because vessels that are in ports, you'll find that the owners have kind of run away, if I can use that phrase. And if they run away, then there are huge sums of money that they would be owing into the department. And P&Is and H&M insurances then will be involved, and it will be protracted discussions to recoup those. But it is outside the ambit of the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and the Environment. It is a matter that the port handles, they handle themselves. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
You really went to town. Thank you very much. I see there are more hands. Honorable Brian, in 2 minutes.
Thanks, Chair. I'll be less than 2 minutes. Just very quickly, in terms of the claims for Antarctica, my understanding, and maybe I'm completely wrong, is that there are a number of claims that have been made by countries in terms of quote unquote ownership of certain sections of Antarctica, but that's not recognized unilaterally by all countries. Are you saying that South Africa recognizes all those claims as ownership? And are there any that we don't recognize? Just trying to find that out, because obviously, you know, you've said that it's claims that going forward that are no longer relevant, but are you saying that we recognize all the claims for Antarctica by all the countries and that they own that land? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Winkler, in 2 minutes.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to Dr. Fikizolo. So my question just is that if it's so difficult to discern between research and prospecting, then surely if there are numerous allegations that are put forth, an investigation should likely take place. Now, who would propose this investigation to the ATCM? So where does the responsibility lie? For example, if DFFE is the one that's been receiving the allegations. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Fikizolo. There's a question on the chat from Honorable Damin. He says his questions are not answered. Will you please check that in less than 5 minutes, really? Now we need to close this matter.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Chair. It is unfortunate, Honorable Bryant, that whilst there may be a bit of an unhappiness amongst certain parties within the ATCM, but the claims that were there before that was closed would stand. And that is why you would find that in the new Australian Antarctic strategy that is coming up very strongly. There is that intent of maybe, if possible, extending that, even though they are, as I said, they owe more than 60% of the land in Antarctica as it stands. So yes, those claims, they stand. And whether there is a recognition or not, they still stand. Recognition would be countries agreeing that this is your claim. Yes. Before that was closed, and those that reserved their right not to claim, they reserved their right not to claim. So I would say they stand, and South Africa has to recognize that as those countries are also party to ATCM. And an investigation, my understanding, subject to correction, is when an allegation is made, that must be followed, that supports what the allegation is all about. Then an investigation will follow. It is very difficult, in my understanding, my apologies again, that an investigation will warrant an investigation. And the body to submit all that would be the secretariat, and not necessarily a party, a country like South Africa, because the allegations that are said to have occurred did not happen within the borders of South Africa, nor did they happen within the exclusive economic zone of South Africa. They all happened outside. So by virtue of South Africa being a member of the ATCM, then does not necessarily put it in the position where they should receive and carry out the investigation. The authority lies with ATCM, and the proper channels would be to submit all those to the secretariat, and the secretariat will compile a report with the allegations and the body of evidence that is supplied, and then table it as one of the documents for discussions within ATCM. And my apologies to Honorable Dlamini. Companies that are operating in Antarctica, particularly if we're talking logistics and we're talking tourism and logistics, those are foreign companies in the main. And then they operate from South Africa, and my understanding is that they will apply for certain permits to conduct business from South Africa. And in terms of benefiting, at least my understanding is that with the ALCI as it stands, it is managed by South Africans. The South African management of South Africans are managing operations, are working as the managing director is a South African, operations manager is also a South African, all from Cape Town, as the company is based in Cape Town. And when it comes into NGOs, one of the NGOs, as mentioned by Honorable Winkler, is Greenpeace, and then the other is ASOC, Antarctic Science Coalition, if I'm not mistaken about the acronym. But the rest of them, I am not sure if who are they or where they are from or what they stand for. It is a matter that perhaps the department would like to really follow up closely. And with investment, I'm not sure, Honorable Dlamini, whether it is investment from the side of the department or investment from the companies that are operating in Antarctica. But I will answer for the department. We have a budget of 160 million for our operations, and the biggest chunk of that goes to the management and operation of the vessel. As you would know, that when the vessel is alongside, that is a key side, it cost us about 280,000 a day. When it is out at sea, it is about 750 to 800,000 rand a day. That is per day at sea. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. I want to urge honorable members, if there are perhaps questions that you feel that they were not sufficiently responded to, that we send them in writing through the secretary of the committee, and that Dr. Vicky Zolo will then respond to the secretary of the committee to process them back to you. DG, I saw at some point your hand was up.
Yes, Chairperson, I wanted to request that those questions that were not adequately addressed, we do so in writing, given that I think we were taking too much time in our response through Dr. Figizol. So we will do so, Chair, when we get the written question. We will respond accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I just check with the presentation? Did you send it to the secretary of the committee? I did not get it.
Yes, Chairperson. The presentations are sent through ministry to the committee. I'm not quite sure what would have happened in terms of that communication, but we can investigate on our side. Thank you, Chair.
Give the DIG presentation. Where is this one in particular?
Honorable Chair, sorry, it's Nick from Minister's Office. I couldn't find the hand. Can you hear me?
Yes, Nick, proceed.
Thank you, Chair. No, it was submitted when it was initially scheduled to be before the committee. So I think beginning of last week. Was sent to Chileka.
Yes, Chair, it is on the WhatsApp group. I don't think it was emailed, but it is on the WhatsApp group.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. I must have missed it. A day I interface with over 500 messages, but I apologize. It then means it's my mistake. I thought it could have been on email. But that's fine. Let's proceed. Thank you very much, DG and Dr. Figizolo. Can we now go to the next item, honorable members, which is consideration and adoption of the minutes of the previous meetings. Chilis, can we flag the minutes?
Yes, Chair, I will.
Okay, which one are we starting with?
Chair, we're starting with the minutes of the 18th of April, this term's minutes, Chair. They're also on our WhatsApp group. So on the 18th and the 19th, we were processing the department's annual performance plan, and we have since adopted a report for these two sets of minutes.
Okay. Let's go page by page on this one. This is the first page.
Listen, it's Anneli. Chairperson, I just want to know why is there a star next to my name? At the attendance register, name of member.
Because you are a star.
Ah, thank you so much. The real reason, yes. Please.
The star refers to an alternate member, Honorable Weber.
All right, I will need you to fix that. I am not an alternate member. Ms. Winkler is the alternate member. Thank you.
I'll correct that. Thank you.
take. That is the first set.
Oh,
yes.
Chairperson.
Hear me.
Yes, yes, yes. On the briefing, thank you, Chairperson. On the briefing by the, I think it's Mangali, so the board chairperson, I believe we should indicate is yes, Inkosi Z Tembe, so that we are not in trouble with the title Inkosi Z Tembe. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Ma'am Kunu.
Okay. Is this the true reflection of what took place there, honorable members? If that's the case, can we get a mover?
I moved.
Siyabonga, honorable Dlamini moves for the adoption of the minutes of the meeting held on the 18th of April, 2023. Can we get a seconder?
I second, Chair, honorable Mkunu.
Siyabonga, honorable Mkunu. Are you flighting the next one, Chile?
Yes, Chair. Please bear with me. I'm going to go and load the next set.
How many sets do we have?
About 6 or 7, Chair.
10, that means you can have.
This is Wednesday the 19th, Chair. Also the continuation of the APPs from the department and the entities, Chair.
Okay. First page for the minutes of the 19th of April. I'm sure Honorable Weber should not correct that thing again of a star. She does not want to be the star. Can you go down to the last page? Let's see. There's something on the resolution. The last bulletin there. The South African National Biodiversity Institute to submit a comprehensive report on the cancellation of the existing membership between Botsok and Sanbi. Did they submit that?
Yes, Chair, it was submitted with the written responses, and then we have since incorporated the responses to the budget vote report that the committee adopted, Chair, on the 2nd of May.
All right. Honourable members, that is those are the minutes of the 19th of April, the continuation of APPs of the department. Can you get a mover?
I move, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Brian. Can we get a seconder?
A second, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mbata. Honourable Winkler?
I was just going to second, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take that as a third hand. Okay, the minutes are therefore a true reflection of what transpired in that meeting. Can we fly the next one? The next set of minutes is the minutes of the meeting of the 2nd of May, 2023. It's
supposed to say draft, not daft. Number two.
Thank you, Honorable Flamini.
On bulletin one, did we get that?
Yes, Chair, it was incorporated in the final budget vote report.
Yes.
Honorable Vera.
Sorry, is this the minutes to the budget report?
Yes, Honorable Vera.
I quickly scanned and I can't see it. Remember we agreed to put the target setting for the rhinoceros, if you can call it. Is it still coming, Talika? We requested that the target setting for the to have it minuted that the target setting should be zero and not more than that for elephants and for the rhinos, if you remember correctly.
Oh, I might have forgotten.
I remember that.
Is that okay?
Thank you.
Okay, they're waiting, Honorable Weber.
Yes, dear. That the target setting should be zero.
Okay.
For switching for rhinos and elephants. I don't know if Honorable Bryant will have better wording for this.
I think
that is what we agreed upon, yes.
Chilis, I think we resolved, not proposed.
Oh, okay. So should I put it under? Okay. And let me say resolved, it's fine.
Yes. Rhino and elephant.
Yes, Jay, that is what the wording, but that actually goes more small for any poaching. You know, poaching is wrong. But yeah, that was our agreement was for rhinos and elephants. Thank you.
Is this wording fine, Honorable Geba?
It should be.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
What did we apologize, therefore, for the meeting late?
We took longer when we were adopting the report, Chair.
Or maybe we wanted to say we apologize for the meeting having started late. Yes, just there. For the meeting having started late.
Okay,
okay, those are the minutes of the 2nd of May. Honorable members, can you get a mover?
I move.
A second.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Weber moves and Honorable Bryant seconds. With those amendments, the meeting of the 2nd of May are duly adopted. The next set. I'll get in the next set, Tailega.
Chair?
Yebo.
Yes, I'm back.
Yes, can you get the next set?
Oh, thanks.
Where did you go?
My network chair is unstable.
Okay.
It's windy in Cape Town, so I got cut off. But I'm back.
So the correct answer, Chair, is supposed to say the network is back, not that she is back.
Okay, this is the draft minutes of the meeting held on the 9th of May. Okay, let's proceed. Okay, this is the reflection of what took place on the 9th of May when we interfaced with various institutions on their presentation on climate change. Can we get the mover? Thank you, Honorable Bryant. Seconda?
I will second, Chair. It's Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Honorable Weber. The minutes are duly adopted as a true reflection of what took place on the 9th of May. The next step.
Chair, may I ask a question? These minutes that we just adopted now, were they not physical meetings? Or it was just a visual meeting?
No, these are visual meetings, Honorable.
There was a choice, yes. There's only one where we had, I think it was on the 23rd of May, Honorable Lamini, that said it's still coming, where we met physically in Committee Room 1 in Ninth Plain.
Yeah. Please don't forget to remove the star. Chilis, I think all the copies of these presentations you have already sent them to us, isn't it?
Yes, Chair, the organizations that presented, some of them, remember, they were presenting separately, they didn't have slides, but where I received slides, I've shared them in our WhatsApp group.
Okay, go a bit up. Down, then, down. Down. So it's copies of the presentation, not copy. Yes. Okay. Those are the minutes of the meeting held on the 5th. Is this not the 15th?
16, Chair.
16.
16 May.
Honorable members,
yes,
the 16th May minutes are flighted. Can we get the mover?
I'll move, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Winkler. Thank you, Honorable Mtunu. The minutes are therefore adopted as a true reflection of what took place in that meeting. These are the minutes of the meeting that took place. This was a physical meeting, Honorable Dlamini, that took place in 120 Plain Street on the 23rd. Of May. Chileka, in this meeting, there was a man who was sitting at the corner there with a computer. Can you go back to the attendees? Oh, yeah, just here. Oh, Dr. Watts was not in the meeting?
No, Chair. Okay. Yo, yes, he was not in the meeting. Sorry.
Who is that man who was seated in the corner?
From the embassy, Chair. There was gift. A gentleman from the embassy. I remember. I can't recall which embassy it was. And then there was Yamkela, the presenters. And then the officials from the fisheries, but I captured the members only.
Chair, I can give you the name, actually. I've got the man's card in my pocket for a complete coincidence. His name was Marco Schmidt from the German Consul General's office. Marco, M-A-R-C-O. And the surname was S-C-H-M-I-T-T. And it was from the German consulate.
Marco Smith. Smith. Okay.
Then it means, Chair, I must then add also the officials from the department, which I will get the names from Boiswa, and then I will send this one to the members, the amended version.
Yeah, so that is a true reflection. We don't want to have...
Okay.
We don't know there. Okay, let's go down. Isn't this the meeting that had problems, Honorable Brian? Problems of capturing and...
Yes, sir. The recording.
Yes, Chair. Unfortunately, there were large portions. I mean, I think I put it on the group, but there were large portions of the meeting that weren't captured, unfortunately. I think Chileka has done her best to capture what she can, but I just think it's a lesson maybe going forward for us just to make sure that we always make sure they're captured properly, because I saw quite a few of Honorable Mbata's comments as well, and mine, a few weren't captured. So I think... Chileka has done her best to try and capture it. I did read through.
Okay, let's go down. You'll capture them a bit later, Chilis. Please go back up. Go to the responses.
Chair, are we still here?
We are here.
So quiet.
Nice and quiet. Tells you that the level of focus is very high, Honorable Zeva.
There is a nice sound of the beat somewhere there.
Yeah.
On resolution number one, bulletin one, didn't we put a time frame there? That the department should provide an update regarding investigation on the Mkente research study.
Yes, Chair, we did. I just can't go through my notes. It's not with me now, but we did, definitely.
Does anyone recall what the time frame was there?
I think it was 10 days. It was supposed to be 10 days. It was normally 10 days, but I can't refer back to anything, but I think it was 10 days.
For seamless transition, can we agree that it is 10 days and we, Chileka, request you to make a follow-up with the department there? Is the DG still here? DG, are you still here?
I did follow up, but the officials, Chair, are in the meeting. They can respond. Buisa?
Yes, Chair. The response is currently with Minister, and he should be responding sometime today.
Today?
Today, once Minister approves the response.
Okay. Because if it was the 23rd of May, then if the 10 days has passed, if it's today, it means we will sleep peacefully. Let's get that response shared with Chileka, who will then distribute to members. Agreed?
Yes, thank you.
Ola. Okay, honorable members, with those amendments, those are the minutes of what transpired with all the difficulties that we had of recordings. I think we must appreciate the best that Chileka did. It was difficult to record everything else there, and Honorable Brian had also raised it in our group. But to this end, I think she tried her best. We really appreciate. Can we get a mover?
I move, Chair, for the adoption.
Thank you very much.
I will second you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Nkunu. Thank you very much, Honorable Weber. I'm not too sure which set of the minutes might be missing something about the colloquium that the committee was invited to. I'm not too sure if any of you members can remember something that relates to a colloquium that we were invited to. One of the presenters make a recommendation that they would like to host a colloquium and invite the committee.
It's on the next session that
you're
going to pass.
Oh, are there still more sets? How many more sets do we have?
Last one, for the 30th of May.
Hi, Andilu, Mtanam. Andilu, too. Okay. Okay, this one set is then adopted. Can we get the 30th of May? Okay, the 30th of May. Hey, those apologies are mainly there. Can you go back a bit? Yes. Can you fix something on first bulletin there, Chilis? The inputs received made various organizations. The inputs received made by various organizations would be considered when the bill is finalized, and urge the secretariat to note, not noted. And capture. Hey, the colloquia. Have you received anything on that thing?
Not yet, Chair.
Did they submit additional information to you?
No, Chair, I didn't get anything, but I'll follow up.
Honorable members, those are the minutes of the meeting held on the 30th of May on virtual platform via Zoom. Are they a true reflection? Can we get a mover and a seconder?
Yes, Chair, they are a true reflection. I move for the adoption.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Mbata. Thank you very much, Honorable Dlamini. The set of minutes of the meeting held on the 30th of May are a true reflection of what was discussed by the Portfolio Committee. Is there another set, Ms. Madubela?
No, Chair, this was the last one.
Okay. Okay. With that being said, that brings us then to the end of the meeting of the Portfolio Committee today. The next item on the agenda is the adjournment. Having discussed all the minutes and having adopted all the minutes and having received the briefing on the Antarctica, with an understanding that there might be some other issues that we might need to write, to raise with the department via the secretary and receive the responses the same way. I see the hand of Honorable Dave Bryant. Honorable Bryant. You are muted, Honorable Bryant.
There we go. I'm unmuted. Thank you, Chair. Chair, just one final point. I know we're going to be going into a recess period now on the 19th until the 28th of August. And I know there's still a heck of a lot of work that we need to do in terms of going through all of the inputs, et cetera, from the climate change bill. I'm just wondering whether or not we may need to meet at some stage over the recess period just to ensure that we give sufficient attention so that it doesn't end up being a rushed process when we get back. Just concerned that, you know, if we do, you know, rush things through right at the end, it could potentially cause some issues going forward. So just to say that myself and the other members of the DA present on the meeting certainly will make themselves available if need be over the recess period if we need to have additional meetings. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Bryant. Were there particular days that you wanted to propose maybe?
I think it would make sense for us potentially just to use Tuesdays, which is what we normally use, but I'm guided by the rest of the committee. Obviously, everyone else has commitments and would need to agree to this as well. You know, if one does it on a virtual basis, as we have been doing, I think it would make it a bit easier for us during that period, not having to move and fly up and down, because I know everyone's going to be working in their constituencies during that time.
Okay. Honorable members, there is a proposal from Honorable Bryant that we, so that we don't put ourselves under unnecessary pressure. We must try to get 1, 2, 3 days during our constituent recess period to try and wrap up these presentations based on the number that we have received. Can we quickly engage on it? Honorable Naren Singh.
Ah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, Chair, no, I was going to raise the same issue and say perhaps we should have a roadmap. But just following on Honorable Bryant, I think we must leave it to our research team and the legal team that have been listening to all the presentations to try and prepare a document. And I think we must aim for sometimes in August so that we give them enough time. We can do a round robin on the dates in August where we might have to just consider all the proposals that have come in from various organizations, and there could be more proposals as well. So I'm agreeing that we should meet before the 28th of August, but perhaps in the month of August to allow everybody time to prepare this comprehensive document. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Singh. Honorable Mkunu.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. With the proposal, of Honorable Bryant with what Honorable Singh is also inputting on, I think it's fine, Honorable Chair, we can live with that whilst we're on recess. We know that there's something that has been processed, but immediately, maybe when August begins, we get an indication from the committee secretary on the dates that will be agreed upon by the chairperson also with the team. Then we meet virtually whilst preparing. I think it's a fair proposal that needs to be supported, Honourable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Kunu. Honourable Dlamini.
Yes, I agree with the principle of meeting any day when we are ready for everything, so that now once we meet, then we know we're not going to go back. We know exactly the road plan, what we're supposed to do. I agree with that principle. The second thing that I wanted to raise, Chair, when I was checking all the minutes, there is a consistent apologies that are taking place, and it was worse on the last meeting that we have. I'm not sure when actually as a committee we need to sit down and reflect on the apologies and the impact that they can make to us for the committee itself. Maybe in fact we need some time to sit down and reflect on the apologies. I'm not sure when, probably any day that now we can sit, that now we need just to take a resolution or some of other learning processes on those kind of matters. It will help me, maybe further and the other people. Apologies like this, they are not good sometimes for our health. Thank you very much.
I don't want anything to temper with your health, Honorable Dlamini. Honorable Mbata.
Thank you, Chair. I will agree and disagree with the proposal because it's a constituency work and some of us will be busy. You'll find that by the time we call a meeting, then we won't be able to attend because of the commitments, because it's strictly for our constituency work. So just like Honorable Dlamini saying that there's too much apologies and we must avoid to have too much apologies. I know people can say they are agreeing, but on the day of the meeting, they won't be there. And you'll find that, like in the last meeting, we were very few. Most of the people were not there. And also on the issue of the apologies, there are apologies that I don't know whether from Chilega do these people apologize, because there's the issue of Comrade of Honorable Honomisa. I mean, he hasn't attended any meeting since the beginning, the past 2 years. But there's always an apology. Is it a standing apology or what? We need to check on the apologies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mbata. Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I understand what Honorable Mbata is saying, but I would like to propose, this is now June. So the proposal from Honorable Singh and Bryant is then the meetings is in August. So it gives a month's time to the researchers and the department to really prepare for this meeting, which they will come prepared. It also gives us time to really prepare for these meetings. And maybe we can elect 2 or 3 days that we know in the morning, the first 3 Tuesdays, for instance. I just give an example, in the morning. So we can plan around that. And we know that Tuesday is for Parliament, for committee meeting, because we arrange our own constituency events and activities, so that we know in August, this 3 days we have that we're going to prepare for that. So maybe we must give the dates on the Tuesdays or whatever date they decide on in August. And we all know that we need to plan around this, because we really have as a committee a responsibility to this bill. And we really have to take it serious. So I think 3 mornings out of 2 months is not too much to ask. If we can prepare, then the department comes prepared. So maybe we must just elect the 3 days now in August. And we know all of us needs to work around that, because that day is set and cast in stone. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Today is the 13th of June. And the recess period that Honorable Bryant is talking about, I think, is around the 19th of August. So we still have July in the middle. Now, and I think we all agree that this bill still needs to go to the National Council of Provinces as a standing parliamentary procedure. So I don't. It is not really my duty to second anyone, but to agree that the proposal is should be welcomed. Of course, with in my view, it's a bit far still in that period of August. Shouldn't we then agree that the management committee of the portfolio committee should sit and discuss the feasibilities, and by when do we think the legal team, the research team, and the secretariat team can be ready with a report, and then communicate timeously, probably a week or 2 weeks in advance, sometime in July, so that we can then engage on the contents of this report. Won't that be workable?
Yes, I think in July we can have a meeting in planning for August with the department to find out where they are. But I also think it's the responsibility of the committee when this bill goes to NA and NCLP that our inputs and everything is cleared with us. So I agree with you that maybe in July, maybe middle July, we have this discussion again with the department to find out how far they are. Maybe they can already give a presentation, and again, we can give our inputs and everything. And then maybe we can agree then on that day, if needs be, for another one or two dates. But then I would propose that we decide on a date now in July, so we work around it. So it's not the day before that we find out we have a meeting tomorrow and none of us can. So if we have a 2 weeks notice, for instance, and we all know, like, say, on the 17th of July, we have a meeting in the morning, we can all plan around that day so that we ensure that we do our job here very well. Thank you.
Honorable Brian.
Thanks, Chair. It seems like there's consensus on the need for us to meet. It's just the practicalities around it. Again, unless I've been given the wrong information, the recess period is from the 19th of June until the 28th of August, which is quite an extensive period. We would need to formally agree that we're going to meet. But perhaps Chileka could send, when she's chatted to the researchers, a couple of options for dates on the group, and then we can confirm those three sittings, because yes, as many of the colleagues said, now this is very different to the Felt and Forest Fire Amendment Bill. That was a few amendments that we needed to make. This is a whole new piece of legislation, so they're more than likely going to be lots of proposed ideas and amendments coming through from all of the different pieces of public participation that we're going to be going through. So we really are going to apply our mind if we want to make sure that what comes out is good at the end of the day. But thanks, Chair, and I agree. Cheers.
Okay. Thanks, Honourable Brian. Honourable Members, let's resolve. Before we do that, I don't know if I'm set to inform you that I got the message that Dr. Watts has been released from parliamentary services due to medical condition. And I hope this will not affect, of course it will, but not to a greater extent, the work of the committee from a content point of view and research. But I want us to agree that today is Thursday, by no later than Tuesday next week, we should revert back to the committee on the proposed dates, Honorable Weber. We should revert back to the committee on the proposed date by no later than next week, Tuesday, on 1, 2, 3 days that we are going to use, so that we also give members enough time to plan accordingly during the recess period. I agree, it is quite long, and your facts are correct. That's the information I also have, Honorable Bryant. So let's revert to the committee by no later than Tuesday on when do we propose to have this meeting, with sufficient time given to members to prepare so that we interface with the outstanding reports. Two, there is also the matter of Khayelitsha that is outstanding, the public hearings in Khayelitsha. I'm not too sure how far are the preparations to, and I would urge all members to avail themselves. That should be our final leg of the public hearings. That would include Honorable Holomisa. Perhaps in that meeting where we discuss the dates as a committee, we should also discuss and ventilate on this matter of availability. I'm not sure how members want to delve into that space. You would understand that we are not, not all political parties are as many as others here. So maybe it could be that other members are attending to other committees, committee work and parliament work. But then be that as it may, let's resolve that by no later than Tuesday next week, we should revert back to the committee to give you dates on the dates that we propose that we should get the report. It will be virtual. Agreed?
I agree, Chair.
Agreed.
Agreed. Thank you, Honorable Brian. Thank you, Honorable Lamini. Chilis, we will get extra work for ourselves. We just got ourselves extra work. Let's work on that. We will meet ourselves and discuss when do we propose, and we'll bring it to the committee to get an approval.
Okay.
Right. Honorable members, with all of that being said, let me take this opportunity to thank you. We will also make follow-ups with the issues that you have raised relating to regarding the permanent absenteeism of other members. Also revert back to you on the matter of Khayelitsha, which should be the last leg of the public hearings in the Western Cape province. I want to take this opportunity and thank you, and the meeting stands adjourned.
And happy youth day to all those who were youth before.